In his 1885 book called Paradise Found, The Cradle of the Human Race at the North Pole, William Fairfield Warren placed Hyperborea, as well as Atlantis, Eden, Mount Meru, Yggdrasil, and Avalon in the Arctic region. He was convinced that the Garden of Eden itself was at the North Pole. Warren proposed that all these fabled lands that are now mostly remembered as mere myth are folk memories of a far northern domain, inhabited long ago, and from which civilization first emerged and then diffused south. Following in the footsteps of Homer, Virgil, and Hesiod, Warren placed the primordial Titan Atlas of Greek mythology, or his world pillar, at the ends of the earth, meaning the far northern Arctic regions. He equated Atlas, who supported the heavens on his shoulders, or the earth on a pillar, with the Atlas described by Plato as the first ruler of Atlantis. So what does that have to do with bowling? Not much, but check this out. Bowling happens to be one of those activities that helps me to relax. And as an anthropologist formally educated in the California State University system, one learns to take advantage of any opportunity to unwind that's available. Needless to say, I completely reject the out of Africa hypothesis, which is force-fed to students by any university that accepts federal funding. And although having graduated with flying colors, I kept an open mind to alternative theories concerning the true origins of civilization, putting my attention on information frowned upon by the UN, but taken very seriously long ago, now largely reduced to myth and legend. Another student of ancient legends was Baal Gangadhar Tilak, who was a very important and revered spiritual and political leader of India from 1880 to 1920. He was also a mathematician, astronomer, historian, journalist, and philosopher. In his book, The Arctic Home in the Vedas, written at the end of 1898 and first published in March 1903, Tilak theorized that the North Pole was the original home of the Aryans during the pre-glacial period and that they had to leave due to the ice deluge. In support of his theory, Tilak points to certain Vedic hymns, Avestic passages, Vedic chronology, and Vedic calendars, which all describe ancient Aryan migrations from the Arctic to Northern Europe and Asia in search of lands for new settlements. Warren Fairfield dedicated his book to Professor Max Müller of Oxford University, and Tilak shared his ideas with Professor Müller just before he passed away. All of these men shared the view that further study of Vedic hymns and Avestic passages revealed the long journey of primitive Aryan antiquity in the north. In the words of Baal Gangadhar Tilak, quote, "It followed, therefore, that if the Vedic evidence pointed to an Arctic home, the forefathers of the Aryan race must have lived therein not after, but before the last glacial epoch," end quote. According to Tilak, after the destruction of the original Arctic home by the last ice age, the Aryan survivors roamed the northern parts of Europe and Asia in search of lands suitable for new settlement. The geography of land and water on the Earth during the interglacial period was quite different from what it is today. The coming of the glacial age destroyed the genial climate and rendered the regions unsuited for habitation by tropical plants and fauna. One needs only to examine the flash-frozen carcasses of mammoth found in the Arctic with still undigested semi-tropical vegetation in their stomachs, that is, plants which can no longer be found in the Arctic, to understand that the climate changed very abruptly and catastrophically as far as the habitation was concerned. A map originally published in 1570 by Abraham Ortelius of Amsterdam is called the Theatrum Orbis Terrarum and is considered to be the first true modern atlas. The North Polar Inset map presents a central continent of Hyperborea or Hyperborea at the Arctic region. Many of the maps in this atlas were based upon sources that no longer exist or are extremely rare. Gerardus Mercator's maps were among the earliest to display the Arctic as a composition drawn from classical and Nordic sources. Mercator was a cartographer and mathematician born in what is now Belgium. He developed the Mercator Projection World Map, which is still in use today. Mercator left us his map from the 16th century, the first to offer an image of the Arctic as sourced from a now lost 14th century book, The Itinerarium of Jacob Nguyen. Such a large, exposed landmass likely does not exist today as depicted, but remnants of it might. What Mercator and other cartographers of his time were showing, probably unknowingly, was an Arctic landmass that existed there many thousands of years ago in antediluvian times. The back of the map gives insight about this ancient land. Its location is described as, and I quote, an extreme region of the north whose apex in the firmament is the North Pole. For this reason, half of the year is one and the same miraculous day, the other half continuous night. There are mountains covered by eternal snows, untouched by the heat of summer, forests without trails, rare animals, and roaring rivers within the abyss of crags. Strange tribes also reside there, and it is known that an immeasurably rich forest troll named Memming has lived there at one point. The wit of these creatures is so filled with insuperable difficulties that a mortal has difficult time getting there. The largest part of the journey is cloaked with an incredibly deep layer of snow. Anyone intending to traverse it must use a conveyance pulled by harnessed reindeer. End quote. Just as Plato wrote about the mythical Atlantis, a continent which was said to be once located above sea level in the Atlantic, Herodotus wrote about the legendary Hyperborean continent, which he said once existed in the far north. This map not only depicts what could very well be the remnants of Hyperborea, but it also seems to imply that a race of pygmies once heavily populated the northern Canadian and Arctic regions where the four rivers intersect. Written on the map, Mercator explains that the ocean waters rush inward towards the center, between the islands to the pole, where they plunge deep into the earth. Directly at the pole is a black island, 33 leagues in circumference. The converging four rivers are rumored to be, at least partially, driven by powerful magnetic currents along the earth's main meridian lines, which circle the entire globe, dividing it into four quarters. On one of the large islands featured in the center of the Arctic map, it is clearly written in the legend, and I translate, "Here live pygmies, at most 4 feet tall, who are like those called Skraelings in Greenland." Who are these people that are mentioned with a supposed height of merely 4 feet, and where did they come from? Olaus Magnus describes the pygmies of Greenland as small in stature, but big of heart. Skraeling is the Norse word for the various natives of the Arctic and the New World, including the mainland native Indians, the Dorset people of the islands, and the Eskimos who replaced the Dorsets in the early second millennium. The word pygmy derives from the Greek word for a unit of measurement called cubit. The pygmies of antiquity were believed to be a cubit or two in height, which is 18 to 36 inches. Pliny the Elder tells us that, quote, "Beyond these in the most outlying number region, we are told of the three-span men and pygmies, who do not exceed three spans, 27 inches in height. The climate is healthy and always spring-like, as it is protected on the north by a range of mountains. This tribe, Homer has also recorded as being beset by cranes. Homer's Iliad mentions the terrible and violent war between the large deadly cranes and the valiant and courageous pygmies. He compares the bloody battles of the Greeks and Trojans to the ferocity of the tireless battles between pygmy and crane. Pliny the Elder noted that the pygmies were believed to have been displaced from their ancestral home by the crane's unrelenting onslaught. He locates a remaining population of pygmies somewhere mainly between Egypt and Ethiopia, though also having found a refuge as far afield as the southeast of the North American continent. Arab scholars agree with the 14th century Italian missionary and explorer Friar Orderic about the tales told in China concerning remnant populations of pygmy struggling to survive against the continued predations of angry cranes in the Himalayas. Chinese annals record similar accounts. According to the most ancient records from the Chinese, Scandinavians, Greeks, Romans, Arabs, and Cherokee, we have an undeniable collective memory of an ancient, millennium-long, and worldwide pygmy versus crane war, resulting in victory for the crane and the near total extinction of the pygmy. The pygmies were eventually fractured, reduced to refugee status, and forced into exile. Small clusters of them settled in Egypt, Ethiopia, Arctic Canada, and the Himalayas in an attempt to flee from the unstoppable cranes, who seemed determined to pursue them to the ends of the earth. In a 2010 article for Live Science called "Giant Storks May Have Fed on Real Hobbits," Charles Choi describes fossils of giant storks found in Southeast Asia, which could provide empirical evidence supporting the ancient myth of the pygmy battles. Perhaps the role of the stork in the way early populations were introduced to each other has been largely forgotten or filed away as myth. Which brings us to this very rare and special map printed in 1740 by Matthias Suter, one of the most important and prolific German map publishers of the 18th century. It is of Schlaraffenland, which is a land of milk and honey, a map of a German concept of utopia. The original map from which this engraving was made was supposedly dropped off at Mr. Suter's map shop, left right outside of his door, mysteriously just left there with no further information about it. For those interested, I go into more detail about this in my book called Gods with Amnesia. That said, this map is not of any known landmass on the surface of the earth, and has peculiar writing on it, such as saying the light is the same both day and night. I would like to now draw your attention to the bottom right-hand portion of the map, which I found extraordinarily interesting. The writing on it says, in German, and I'll translate, "a utopian map of the newly discovered Schlaraffenland. This land was often spoken of, but never located, and nobody knows where it is. This ridiculous fantasy land is composed of many kingdoms, which have all the different vices of life within them, and that this map was delivered by anonymous authors." Could this so-called fantasy map in actuality be giving us a clue as to the polar entrance to the inner Earth, which piqued the interest of nationalist Germany in the early part of the last century? As you can see, the writing is on what appears to be a large rock, or a mountain, with four rivers running into it. Does this remind you of the Mercator map we examined at the start of this video? Could this map be a portion of the inner world? My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. Please consider reading my book, Gods with Amnesia, available on Amazon. Kindly leave me your thoughts in the comment section. Please don't forget to subscribe and share and like. Thank you, and I hope to see you again soon.